You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 27th of January, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Sven, I'm in a lot of pain. And let me tell you something. I'm in so much pain that it's 7 degrees outside. I'm not even feeling it. And you know why I'm in so much pain? I'm in so much pain because I have to read American journalists writing on the Ukrainian-Russia situation. It is the most painful thing I've ever had to deal with. I've had kidney stones less painful than having to read American journalists writing on Ukraine. I can't take it anymore. So hopefully today we'll say something that has some truth to it, and maybe the pain will go away. But I doubt it.
I hope so. I've gone from pain from recovering from a post recovering from an operation to pain from reading about Ukraine and Russia. It certainly is an interesting couple of articles that we've got for the listeners today. And of course, it is on the main news of the moment, which is what's happening between Russia, Ukraine and NATO. And we have an article here from globalresearch.ca, which is written by Dean Knight, that we will be using. He says the dangerous standoff has lasted for most of a year. Each side accuses the other of threatening war in a way reminiscent of the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. During a week of intense diplomatic meetings in three European capitals, which appeared to reach a dead end, President Joe Biden seemed to blink midweek on January 19th, telling reporters in Washington he had indicated to Russian President Putin that we can work out something. New York Times senior reporter David Sanger jumped on it. Mr. President, it sounds like you're offering some way out here, some off-ramp, an informal assurance that NATO is not going to take in Ukraine, and we would never put nuclear weapons there. Sanger went on to say, Russia wants us to move all of our nuclear weapons out of Europe and not have troops rotating through the old Soviet bloc. Biden quickly said, no, there's no space for that. I think there is some space possibly for some more sanctions, though, if Putin does go in there to protect the Russians, the ethnic Russians that are in Ukraine. What do you make of this, Matt?
Well, I'm not entirely sure why the Americans have nuclear weapons in Europe at all. I'm not sure who they're pointing at. Europe, as we know, isn't really Europe anymore. And I just think that David Sanger in the Jewish-run New York Times is calling for war because they see Putin as an anti-Judaic person, especially in the Middle East and elsewhere. And we can't deny that that's a huge factor in pushing for war. Besides that, remember, we can't refer to Biden in any normal sense. He has no grasp of what's going on. And I said in my show yesterday that the BlackRock organization, investment bankers, these are the people who really matter. And most of the cabinet is based on it. And really, in Ukraine, it's no different. Beyond that, we have to also remember that Ukraine is never an independent country. It's controlled by the U.S. The American embassy runs it. These are puppets, often kids, like the defense ministry. And the defense production agency is run by non-military people, usually guys younger than me. It's a charade. So, again, the Global Research website is much less painful to read than mainstream places. So that's why we're using them here. There's about 70% truth here, and that's a very, very good score given what's being published today.
Biden's blink was a break in the warlike atmosphere that has prevailed endlessly. Katrina Vandenhoevel wrote the day before in the Washington Post that hotheads were having a field day. A White House task force that includes the CIA was reportedly contemplating US support for a guerrilla war if Russia seizes Ukraine. Russian hawks talk of a military deployment in Cuba and Venezuela. And of course, we mentioned that last week, didn't we? We were hoping something like that might happen. Biden had installed a team of national security managers from the blob, marinated in successive debacles in Iraq, Libya, Syria, Yemen, and more. Guns and sanctions are the US empire's preferred options, Van den Heuvel said. With about 800 military bases outside the United States, the US has more bases than diplomatic missions. Russia's only military bases outside the former Soviet Union are in Syria. She added that Secretary of State Blinken and the blob talk about a rules-based international order, but respect it only if we make the rules, often exempting ourselves from their application. She seems to be speaking the truth here. Matt, what do you make of that?
Well, it does make sense, but it's the attitude of empire. An empire believes that it has this inherent right to dominate others. Why the U.S. has any interest in Ukraine, I think for most Americans, is a mystery. And Ukrainians certainly don't realize. I know why where the interest comes from. And I talked about it on my show yesterday. But at this point, if Russia were to absorb Ukraine, the Ukrainian economy would immediately recover. They'd go to the ruble, which is far superior than their hryvnia, which they, you know, the Ukrainian currency. They'd go the same way of as Crimea. They'd be a part of a huge eastern market. They'd have immediate Chinese investment. Corruption would go out the window. So many of these oligarchs, Jewish oligarchs, would retire. The new Khazaria idea would disappear. Jews would be going crazy. But Ukrainians would be infinitely wealthier than they are now. They'd be lifted out of the almost very quickly lifted out of the fourth world, like the Crimea. You'd see construction. You'd see massive investment from the Russians. It would be in the SCO. It would be a gift to the Ukrainians. And I think the West, in some buried, neurotic way, is aware of this.
It does seem like they're pushing Putin to do something. I mean, Biden's come out today, or Blinken has come out today, and said there's absolutely no way that we're going to pay any attention to the requests or the demands that Lavrov wrote out for them last week, talking about Russia's fears about what was going on, about this encircling of Russia, these weapons that are pointing at Moscow. I mean, it all makes common sense what Putin and what Russia is saying, but for America just to say, no, we're not having it. We're not having it. It does seem as if they're goading Putin into doing something. When will the US stop lying to itself about global politics? Asked CUNY professor Peter Beinart, writing in the New York Times on January 13th. He took issue with Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who pontificated last month that one country does not have the right to dictate the policies of another, or to tell that country with whom it may associate. One country does not have the right to exert a sphere of influence. That notion should be relegated to the dustbin of history. Beinart commented, "It's a noble principle, but just not one that the United States abides by. The United States has exercised a sphere of influence in its own hemisphere for almost 200 years. Since President James Monroe declared that the United States should consider any attempt by foreign powers to extend their system to any portion of this hemisphere as dangerous to our peace and safety." Blinken's dustbin of history was still around in 2018, Beinart said, when Trump's Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called the Monroe Doctrine as relevant today as it was the day it was written. And Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, boasted that the Monroe Doctrine is alive and well. It's not just in that particular hemisphere that there's this American influence. I think people see it everywhere through Hollywood, this soft power. And what you were talking about in your podcast, Matt, about this liberal ideology. That's what this is about. That's what this sphere of influence is progressive liberalism, isn't it?
Yeah, don't. You know, there's such a powerful psychological component here that I'm very loath to make those arguments. But here, the neuroticism of NATO and the U.S. is very clear. It you know, they're like Monty Burns from The Simpsons. They actually believe they have this tremendous power, that this empire is healthy, that capitalism and liberal democracy are the end of history, that they embody social justice. Anyone who disagrees with them is crazy. This is really and the lack of expertise in this area in the State Department and the DOD. I talked about this yesterday, the minuscule number of actual experts in this area that have any power, which is why I'm in so much pain all the time. But beyond that, NATO is falling apart at the seams. Any kind of invasion, any kind of military action would probably lead to the French yet again leaving NATO. Germany is already thinking about it. The Eastern European, Central European states like Poland, who are symbolic members, would there's a very good chance that they would be less than enthusiastic. The U.S. realizes at some neurotic level that it doesn't have this capacity, but its public persona comes from pure collective narcissism and its refusal to admit that the U.S. simply doesn't have the power, the money, the ability, the men, the will to engage any organized country, especially something like Russia, which is tremendously patriotic. The military is reformed and mobile and intensely nationalist. That the U.S. cannot handle. And if it can't handle Somalia, it can't handle Russia. It's that simple. And certainly neither can Ukraine.
Well, I should imagine a large portion of Ukraine is actually supportive of Russia. You know, obviously, the ethnic Russians are most likely to be supportive of Russia, but I should imagine quite a few Ukrainians have looked and seen the improvement to life expectancy and improvement to welfare that took place in Crimea once it joined up with Russia. I should imagine, you know, they haven't even got support for this in Ukraine. Well, Blinken wants a one-way street where spheres of influence are concerned. The US, for him, has the right to wield influence everywhere while others don't. The same day Biden blinked, French President Macron weighed in, saying war would be the most tragic thing of all. Speaking in the European Union's capital of Strasbourg as new interim EU chair, Macron said he hoped to revitalize the four-way Normandy format talks between Russia, Germany, France, and Ukraine to find a solution to the Ukraine crisis. It is vital that Europe has its own dialogue with Russia, Macron said. The EU had no part in the talks last week between Russia, the US, NATO, and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. The Normandy format has been a vehicle for implementing the 2015 Minsk agreements designed to end the separatist war in Ukraine's Donbass region. This solution has already been proposed and accepted in principle, according to Anatol Levin, who wrote in The Nation that the Minsk II agreement was already adopted by France, Germany, Russia, and Ukraine in 2015 and endorsed unanimously by the UN Security Council. Key elements of the Minsk II deal are full autonomy for Ukraine's eastern regions in the context of decentralization of power in Ukraine, demilitarization, and restoration of Ukrainian sovereignty. Despite agreement by all parties, political analyst Anatol Levin says, because of the refusal of Ukrainian governments to implement the solution and refusal of the United States to put pressure on them to do so, the settlement is a kind of zombie policy. Perhaps we should have a closer look at this Minsk agreement here, Matt. It's talking about full autonomy for Ukraine's eastern regions. Is that the Donbass region and restoration of Ukrainian sovereignty? Wouldn't the Ukrainians assume that that meant that they had sovereignty over Crimea again? I mean, it doesn't seem to me as if this Minsk agreement is really believable. Am I understanding it wrong? Can you tell us some more about it, please?
You know, I've read when this first came out both agreements 1 and 2 in the original language, and it's absurd. People signed it just to look good more than anything else. One of the reasons it's absurd is that Ukraine is never going to pull its mercenaries out of the area. It's never going to pull its any heavy weaponry out of the area. And most importantly, it says that once this is put into force, that Ukrainian government is going to organize elections in eastern Ukraine, which, of course, no one's ever going to accept because it's going to mean that they're going to install who they want. They're going to go Biden and simply just put in who they desire, or have election after election after election until they get what they want, like in Montenegro. At least in this case, the U.S. wasn't really involved. But to the extent that the French feel that there's this U.S.-UK alliance against them, which I think they do, there's a chance of doing what de Gaulle did in 1966 and withdrawing. I keep saying this. I mean, Ukraine, as of now, cooperate with NATO on a lot of things. They've had token men in every American adventure abroad, but they're not particularly significant. And I've said 1,000 times, the cost for the Ukrainian military to be fully integrated with NATO is probably more than 10 Ukrainian national budgets worth money. And so it's never going to happen. If anything, it's going to be purely symbolic. I've gone through all the equipment of the Ukrainian military, and 90% is aging equipment coming from the USSR or existing from the Soviet era. There's some Israeli contributions. The American contribution is minimal. But to be a NATO member, you have to be fully integrated into the command structure. Soldiers, training, equipment, they have to be totally transferable from one to the other, which means it will cost a small fortune. A large fortune to do that. So actually coming into NATO is simply a way to goad Russia into doing something that has every right to do it, and frankly has every right to invade the country. You're right to say that Ukrainians are generally pro-Russian. I've gone through the, which is not available to English speakers, I've gone through all the polling, even in Western Ukraine. They look at Crimea, as you already said, they look at Crimea, they see this explosion in well-being because they adopted the ruble and they're a part of the customs union with full open markets. Ukraine does have something, and this is something that no one's talking about. Ukraine has nothing to offer the West, but it has a lot to offer the East. Their economy would explode if they simply jettisoned the West and its bankrupt policies and went fully independent, but like Belarus, in cooperation with Russia and the customs union, which is what Yanukovych wanted to do, which is why he was destroyed. So this whole thing is pure, unadulterated corruption and empire. And the only way Ukraine to get its sovereignty back is for Russia to bring it out of the U.S. orbit, which is extreme. But this is what they're being pushed to do. And it's totally the U.S.'s and NATO's fault.
So I guess it would be a big bonanza for the military companies, wouldn't it, if Ukraine did end up joining with NATO. And of course, it is this NATO expansion, which is really at the heart of all this. The issue of NATO expansion is another zombie policy, as the US refuses to acknowledge Russia's legitimate opposition to it. After the first of three negotiating sessions between the US and Russia during the week of January 10th, Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov had declared it absolutely mandatory that Ukraine never, never, ever become a NATO member. In response, US Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman said, "We will not allow anyone to slam closed NATO's open door policy." When US Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin met with Ukraine's President Zelensky in Kiev in October, he promised US support for Ukraine's future NATO membership and blamed Russia for perpetuating the war in eastern Ukraine. Russian President Putin shot back on December 23rd that further movement of NATO eastwards is unacceptable. They are on the threshold of our house. And I guess the issue isn't really, you know, if Ukraine wants democracy or whatever Ukraine wants in that realm. I mean, that's fine if she wants to be, you know, she is a sovereign country. But to put another empire's weapons there right on the border with Russia pointed at Moscow is unacceptable. And I don't understand why it's only us in the alternative media that are pointing this out. Matt, what are your thoughts on this NATO expansion?
Well, this is why I mentioned the psychological element. Despite the fact that the U.S. has surrounded Russia with military bases, has threatened war through numerous presidents, has threatened war over and over again, has sanctioned the country, somehow, in the empire's mind and the regime's mind, Russia is the aggressor. It's like beating the crap out of someone. They slap you once, and you go running to the principal saying, "Oh my God, I was attacked." There is a psychological element here. Somehow they're burying this information and repeating the regime's line so many times that they start to believe it. But it is true at the same time that Zelensky himself is not all that enthusiastic of any kind of NATO intervention. The Ukrainian military establishment, knowing full well that it's not capable of very much, has been proven many times before with antiquated equipment and a very disloyal soldiery. And as I've said before, a cowardly general staff. They're not very excited about provoking Russia this way. They know that they can't defend themselves. There's a relatively small number of NATO troops vaguely in the area. They're not there for any kind of real defensive action. They're there in hopes that a Russian response will kill a few NATO members, and that will be the excuse that they need. But overwhelmingly, NATO is worthless. You know, most of the countries in Northern Europe have these female defense ministers. They're just plum positions that are given out to loyalists because they know that the U.S. is going to do most of the work. Even Trump, I remember the 2016 campaign, once in a while he would talk about the U.S. withdrawing from NATO and destroying it. And he didn't follow through on that in his term, but he did talk about it. No one's talking about how weak that alliance is, both militarily and military, economically, and politically. Denmark is, thinking about withdrawal. France is always thinking about withdrawal. Greece almost withdrew over Turkey and Cyprus. But when you have an alliance that has Montenegro and Albania as members that have, I think, five soldiers between them without any adjustment on their part, these are simply symbolic members that have no real military role. It's going to be the U.S. that does all the work, but the U.S. is not capable of that kind of work. So really, this is bluster. This is just arrogance. And it's this belief that the empire has a right to do all this. But there is a psychological element. You don't have the expertise in the State Department or the DOD, so they invent this Russian enemy that they then project onto everything that Russia does. It is a form of collective narcissism and a delusion and a sense of a superiority complex. Psychology does have a role in dealing with this insanity, that it's only us that are pointing out the most obvious economic and political points here.
I really do think Putin should start acting proactively instead of reactively and just put a base in Mexico or Venezuela. I mean, that I would just love to see that and then see how the mainstream media cope with it. Well, last March 24th, the Ukrainian president decreed that Ukraine would take Crimea back from Russia with military measures to achieve deoccupation, and the US and NATO voiced unwavering support. In April, NATO backed a Ukrainian offensive in its civil war against Russian-allied separatists in the eastern provinces, Donetsk and Lugansk. That is when Russia moved more troops to its borders with Ukraine, signalling that it would defend its allies. Former CIA case officer and CAM columnist John Kiriakou has reported that the actual number of Russian troops massed on the Ukraine border, estimated between 70,000 and 90,000, was the same number that had been there for the last 8 years, and that Western media reports of a Russian troop build-up were inflammatory. Vice Admiral K. Achim Schoenbach, the head of the German Navy, was forced to resign after saying talk of a Russian invasion of Ukraine was nonsense, and that Russia was merely seeking respect for its security concerns in Europe. I saw that, and I did think, well, that was a rare voice of common sense in the mainstream media, and they sacked him straight away. I mean, he's a highly decorated vice admiral in the German army. What do you make of what they say here about Crimea, Matt? Do you think it's ever going to go back to Ukraine?
No, I think there would be, a Northern Ireland style guerrilla war if that were ever the case. It would mean going back to the Third World. Since Crimea has been a part of Russia, there's been a massive economic explosion, because both Russia and China, despite COVID, have invested heavily in the area. I didn't get to in my lecture yesterday the attempt of China to help rebuild Ukraine's natural gas policy and infrastructure. And every penny of their investment was lost through graft and corruption. This is normal in Ukraine. China will never do this again. But they are doing it in Crimea with great results. And so the pro-American Ukrainians, which I think are very few, in the cities and elite positions, they have to bury this information. And occasionally, again, this is what narcissists do. Someone exposes the obvious reality and they are immediately shut down. This is what a narcissist is. They have this mythical sense of their own self-image that they know deep down is false. So anytime someone exposes it as false, they have to be dealt with immediately and sometimes violently. I don't picture most of the military apparatus in any of these NATO countries differing from the vice admiral here. They're going to be slaughtered without material, without this is a for-profit defense industry, unlike Russia. And they know that they have no chance here over a country that they have no particular interest in. this is a ridiculous. I mean, at least for something like Vietnam, you can claim that this was a war against Soviet expansion. At least there you had a case. Here it's nothing. It's invented evidence, intelligence reports that no one ever can cite or ever see, and speculation about an area. And Russia has every right to have a huge role in Ukraine. The U.S. doesn't. There are millions and millions of Russia speakers, both of Ukrainian and Russian background in that country. And the Ukrainian the U.S.-led Ukrainian government shutting down every Russian newspaper, every Russian political party, shutting down every social media account there that has any pro-Russian material. This is what Russia has to respond to. I completely agree with you that Putin has to be very proactive here, because if an actual shooting war started, you're going to see the Ukrainian government simply slaughtering, as they've done in the past, any pro-Russian element, as this is what warfare gives the excuse to do this to its enemies. God knows it's going to happen to me if the U.S. is involved in this, or anyone like me out there. War will give a perfect excuse for the absolute destruction of what's left of the pro-Russian infrastructure in Ukraine. That means Russia has every right to take military action if the Ukrainians and NATO do something stupid.
Well, it is something similar like that that makes me think that this is not going to end up heating up, and that is because we still have RT on the Freeview over here. I think the first thing they would do is switch RT off if things got to a stage where it did look like Russia was going to actually invade Ukraine. Well, continuing with the NATO provocations here, last summer, 30,000 US troops led Operation Defender Europe 2021, a set of NATO exercises from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea, according to the US Peace Council. In December, the US staged simulated bombing raids within 12 miles of Russian airspace. NATO warplanes confronted Russian aircraft 290 times in 2021. The CIA, since 2015, has secretly trained elite Ukrainian special forces units in firearms, camouflage techniques, land navigation, tactics like cover and move, intelligence, and other areas. On December the 7th, Under-Secretary of State Victoria Nuland told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee the US has given $2.4 billion to Ukraine since 2014 in security assistance, $450 million in 2021 alone. Just this week, the Biden administration approved an additional $200 million in military aid to add to that $450 million given last year. Nuland helped orchestrate the 2014 coup in Kiev, the Ukrainian capital, that toppled a government friendly towards Russia. The new far-rightist government ended language rights for Russian speakers, who are the majority in Ukraine's eastern provinces. Donetsk and Lugansk voted to separate, as did Crimea. Russia then annexed Crimea to protect the Russian speakers there and to secure its Black Sea naval base. Russia provided humanitarian aid and trade to Donetsk and Lugansk and stationed troops on their eastern border for protection. I don't like the way they claim that it's a far-right government in Ukraine. It has gay pride there and all the liberal progressivism. If it was a nationalist government, they would be quite happy for the parts that were ethnically Russian to have self-determination. So it's not right to call them far right or nationalist, I think, Matt. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you see, I wasn't in pain up until that point. I kind of forgot about that. One of the most ridiculous arguments that the Russians put out is that, and there are a few bad ones, that this is a neo-Nazi government. These idiots. What kind of national socialism? I mean, there is a national socialist government in the East. It's the only way you could put it, only way to describe them. But what kind of far rightist wants to be a part of NATO and the EU? They're already promoting females in the, I think, the Ukrainian army right now is almost 20% female. The West is immediately going to want the total privatization of the Ukrainian military apparatus because right now it's a state-controlled system like in Russia. So it's absolutely absurd. But this security, you know, you have a country that is in almost fourth world status with no functional economy, with massive inflation and massive unemployment. And the money, billions are going to the defense industry, and money that's, by the way, totally unaccounted for and irrelevant since Ukraine's military is based around old Soviet models of equipment anyway. So the whole thing is pure. They know they're never going to see this money again. They know they're never going to see any return on this investment. because there's no way that this is going to actual security concerns. It's going to line the pockets of the handful of kids that run the military apparatus. And that's been the case in the past. Biden is not involved in any of this. He doesn't know where he is. And I'm happy that they refer to the administration rather than Joe Biden. So the whole thing, I mean, every line, every concept here is absurd. It's like a Kafka novel. And it's, you know, again, there's a psychological element here that no one's really talking about. Ukraine is going to go deeper into the fourth world, while the military apparatus is going to be able to play with all this money from the West, and it will lead to nothing.
Well, we have another article here which looks at support for each side. This is by Eric Margolis. Amid surging tensions over Ukraine, the head of Germany's Navy had the courage to voice Europe's fears over this totally unnecessary and contrived crisis. In a speech to an Indian think tank, Vice Admiral K. Achim Schoenbach proposed the Western powers respect Russian leader Vladimir Putin and accept that Crimea would remain in Moscow's hands. The German admiral's remarks produced a major uproar in Washington and tut-tuts in Europe, where hatred of Russia has become a state fetish. Most aggrieved were the British and Americans, who deeply fear an alliance, or at least entente, between Germany and Russia that might undermine US domination of the continent. Germany, Europe's leading military force and mainstay of NATO, has hollowed out its military power. Thanks to unqualified female defence ministers, Germany's armed forces have degenerated into parade troops. Armour and aircraft, once hallmarks of German military power, have become feeble toys, lacking in munitions, spare parts, and capable crews. Polls show Germans have very little interest in confronting Russia. Memories of World War II are still raw. Today's Germans live in a nation that was 50% destroyed by US and British bombing. Millions of Germans come from families driven out of Eastern Europe. There is not a lot of sympathy for Ukraine's current government that was installed by a US-financed and stage-managed coup in 2013-2014. Germany's US-dominated media and government support Washington's hard line on Ukraine, but many ordinary Germans and French just don't agree. America's media and politicians strongly support the military confrontation with Russia, a low-cost way of being loudly patriotic without actually doing anything serious. So what do you make of this, Matt? Because there's always been this thing between Russia and Germany as well, hasn't there, with the Second World War. How do you think that plays into this?
Well, how many times on this show and elsewhere have I spoken about the de facto alliance between Russia and Germany? How many times have I said this? You know, thanks, Eric, for saying something, you know, obvious, something we've been talking about here, talking about fetishes. But the very fact he does refer to the ridiculous – I didn't even know Germany had a navy when they mentioned this vice admiral. It seems so bizarre at this point, knowing full well that the U.S. is going to do most of that work anyway. Germany and France are heavily invested in Russia. They're doing very well there. France has had long-standing ties with Russia going back to the 18th century. They have no interest in war. The U.S. is relatively irrelevant to the Russian economy. Sanctions are mostly symbolic, but I love how we put the parade soldiers. That's really all it is. Why spend money on the military when you know full well that NATO is just a code word for the United States? And you're right. There is going to be no hot war here for a whole bunch of reasons. But I guess they're hoping that the Russians will back down and hence liberalism will be vindicated. Because ideology, I'm telling you now, is one of the dominant factors here. Russia is proof that liberalism is a fraud. And it's a break on American and liberal expansion worldwide. I've been saying this for a long time. If it wasn't for the Russia-China alliance, liberalism would totally dominate the planet. We would probably be in prison right now or in some gulag. These are the countries that are keeping this from happening. Yes, I think Germany actually does have a navy.
Well, navies are obsolete anyway now that Russia has hypersonic missiles. Only Poland, the Baltic states, and American neocons really hunger for war, but only if it is waged by the US. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken, a rising star amongst the pro-war neocons, is pushing this confrontation with Russia. He is yet another bureaucrat with no military experience. Military men quickly understand the logistic and climactic problems of fighting in the Black Sea region. but not Washington's desk warriors and their European satraps. The US has been unwise to provoke a confrontation with Russia in its backyard. Though Russia has lost much of its Soviet-era military power, it would be a mistake to underestimate its combat capabilities and overestimate those of NATO. Remember Napoleon, who was seriously defeated in Russia and prayed, "O Lord, if I must go to war, please make it against a coalition." Washington's sofa samurais are playing with fire. The neocons' latest effort to overthrow President Putin risks backfiring badly by drawing China into the fray and undermining US domination of the continent. Let's say US-led NATO forces thrash the 106,000 Russian troops around Ukraine's borders. Well, what then? An advance on Moscow? An assault on Crimea? Might Romania join the war to recover Moldova lost in World War II? Or tiny Finland? The Russians are unlikely to be quivering in their boots. Romanian troops, let's recall, were defending the flank of Germany's 6th Army at the Stalingrad disaster. We are not going to see a rerun of the Great Northern War of the early 1700s. What we are seeing is the rebirth of Russian power in its traditional sphere of influence. Admiral Schoenbach is quite right. Russia will never relinquish Crimea any more than Germany would give over Hamburg or the US cede Baltimore to Cuban control. Luckily for us, Russia is currently being run by hard men from the old KGB who are experienced and cautious. It is well that they are, because Russia has thousands of nuclear weapons pointed at the US and its allies. No one in their right mind should contemplate a nuclear confrontation. Russia has repeatedly made clear that if backed into a corner, it may well use tactical nuclear weapons, and China is coming around to the same thinking. Beaten in Vietnam, Iraq, and now Afghanistan, the US is seeking a cheap victory in Ukraine. But the northern rim of the Black Sea is not known for its low-hanging geopolitical fruit, and Russia always surprises. Mr. Blinken should be very cautious, lest he find a hypersonic Russian missile come flying through his office window sometime soon. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
Well, we could only hope. These people here are so ignorant. They honestly believe that 100,000 men, 80,000 men is remotely relevant to any kind of military action in a place the size of Ukraine and that part of Russia. Can you imagine the U.S. military, uneducated, incompetent, with trannies and women and homosexuals doing a march on Stalingrad or on Moscow? The whole thing is purely, it's Kafkaesque, so it's too cliche to even say. This is surreal. And he does point out the fact that these are non-military men. These are politicians. And to actually believe, can you imagine the mentality you would have to believe that a quick and painless victory is going to be had in Ukraine, of all places? This is why my stomach is in knots here. And, I'm going to have to take a break at some point. The absurdity is way beyond my capacity to handle. And I've been doing this for 30 years.
Well, it was hard enough when Hitler tried it, and that was before the winter had set in. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless, and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.